Oregon's first ever State of the Housing Report last year offered a grim picture of our state's housing landscape. Home and rental prices continue to outpace wages. Eviction cases are the highest they've ever been in more than a decade. And more than 20,000 people across the state were experiencing homelessness in 2023. Oregon ranks first, which is the worst in the nation, for the most families with children living without shelter. Oregon's rate is 14 times higher than the national average, according to the report. For home buyers in Oregon, buying a home for a white household today is still more affordable than it was in 2018 for BIPOC residents, Black Indigenous people of color. The home ownership rate for communities of color in Oregon is 49%, compared to 66% for white Oregonians. Overall, the report paints a bleak picture of the housing landscape in Oregon today. But there are efforts ongoing to change the status quo. That's the focus of this segment of The Exchange. Oregon Housing and Community Services, in partnership with Build Up Oregon, has committed $7.4 million in grants and loans to 9 innovative projects that will co-locate early child care and education services within affordable housing developments across the state. Joining me on The Exchange to discuss this innovative approach are 3 guests. On the phone is Andrea Bell, Executive Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. Welcome, Andrea.
Hey, Mike. It's good to be with you.
And joining me in the studio is Jeffrey Lowry. He's the Program Director for the Oregon Child Development Coalition in Ashland. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Krista Palmer is the Executive Director of Sunstone Housing Collaborative in Ashland. Welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So, Andrea, let's start with you. Tell me about this approach to including child care and education services inside affordable housing developments.
Yeah, well, it is no surprise to anybody living here in the state of Oregon that we have a housing supply issue, both in terms of availability of affordable housing and affordability. In addition to that, we have several communities across Oregon that are also child care deserts, which means we have a lot of families that are not only struggling with availability and access to affordable housing, but also are having a similar experience with child care. And so in 2021, the state legislature created a bill and a set aside of resources to explore what we could do about that. And so as part of this partnership that we have created, we are doing something about that. And so it is really doing what we do as the state's housing agency, expanding and boosting housing supply, but with a little bit of a different twist to respond to this unique need, which is to co-locate early care and education into some of these housing developments to solve locally driven issues in a way that is going to be responsive to the need that a lot of people are feeling right now.
Okay, and you partnered with Build Up Oregon.
That's right.
Well, tell me about Build Up Oregon.
Yeah, well, Build Up Oregon has been a really important partnership for us. As you can imagine, as a state housing agency, our core expertise is not in early care and education. But Build Up Oregon really brings together a broad set of expertise, both in the child care and the education and the local business space, to really come together to help really do a couple of things. One, understand what the core issue is. Why are we experiencing child care deserts here in Oregon? And one of those issues that was really raised up was around space. We don't have enough space and infrastructure in place to accommodate it. The other one, as you can imagine, which is around cost. Somebody has to finance it and to help garner these partnerships together. And then the third thing that Build Up Oregon really helped do is really help figure out where government sort of needs to take a step back, and I think also help create the conditions and circumstances to solve these issues through partnership. And so Build Up Oregon really helps facilitate the partnership between experts in the early care and education space and then the housing developers to come together to bring these projects to life, to make sure that they are not just solving an issue, but they're solving an issue in a way that is responsive to that one specific community's needs, which are a little bit similar, but also a little bit vastly different as well.
Okay, that's a perfect segue because I have a couple of experts right here in the studio with me. Jeffrey, what's the role of Oregon Child Development Coalition?
ultimately, the role of Oregon Child Development Coalition started as a migrant seasonal program. We took care of the children whose parents work in the fields. And that's the way it really started. The parents were looking for some way for their children to be taken care of so that they could actually pick the fruit and pick the fruit and the vegetables from the local fields in town and that. Then it expanded into assisting other areas, such as there are a lot of people who need childcare. There's so much, that's such a an integral part of a successful community. Yeah. And so we took on the role of expanding that into, can we be in underserved areas? An underserved area would be like Ashland. Ashland is very underserved. But Jackson County is very underserved too. Under 30% of the population, 0 to 5, has access to any kind of childcare or preschool programs. There's so many studies that talk about childcare and how that improves a child's life, and it gives them a head start on their lives.
Absolutely.
And that's a big part of this. I believe that every kid and every child deserves a positive, quality preschool experience. Every kid that I know that has been a part of that experience has been successful. And it's sort of near and dear to my heart because of what it actually can do for somebody. And as somebody who is one of the first Head Start kids in America, it is extremely important to me. Okay. I credit it with everything that's happened to me in my life.
So Oregon Child Development Coalition mm-hmm. is a coalition.
Yes.
You're located here in Ashland?
We're all located all over the state.
Okay, so
we're in every county in the state. Yes. We're in every county in the state. Mm-hmm. There are over 5,000 kids in our we serve throughout the state of Oregon.
0 to 5.
0 to 5.
Okay, so Krista, tell me about Sunstone Housing Collaborative.
Hi, thank you. So Sunstone Housing Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed about a year and a half ago in response to an initiative that the Ashland School District brought about, recognizing that they had a significant need for an increase in enrollment and subsequently support for their staff. And again, recognizing this common thread of a lack of affordable housing statewide, but specifically here in Ashland, the school district began an initiative of trying to build or at least seek out partnerships and the infrastructure to build affordable housing on a parcel of school district-owned land. They also recognized that the school district didn't have the specific capacity to pursue that pre-feasibility process, and so that's when Sunstone Housing Collaborative was formed. We serve as vision stewardship, project administrator, partnership building, and community connection. And, that's where I came in. I have a background in occupational therapy that really influences a lot of how I pursue this project, how I organize this project, and how I think about it. A lot of systems thinking around occupational justice, universal design, and really how our built environment affects our lives in so many different ways.
I'm glad you brought that up. Let me remind everyone of who I'm talking to. My guests are Andrea Bell, Executive Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services, Jeffrey Lowry, Program Director for the Oregon Child Development Coalition, and Krista Palmer, Executive Director of Sunstone Housing Collaborative. You talked about why you do what you do. And one of the things I like to do when I have guests on is find out their story. So, Krista, tell me your story. Where'd you grow up? How'd you get involved in the work that you do today?
Okay. I grew up all over California, San Diego, Bay Area, Central Valley. I lived in Orange County, California for a while. That's where I went to college. I lived in Santa Ana for about the better part of 10 years. During my time there, I worked in an early intervention clinic for children 0 to 3. I was a teacher there. I worked with occupational therapists, physical therapists. This is a population of kiddos that are, in the early stages of experiencing a disability, families navigating that. So there was a lot of family interaction, really looking at the whole picture of how these families are being supported. I left that job and became really interested in occupational therapy. That's where I found it. I integrated that a lot in my teaching at the time. I worked for a while on a project in Santa Ana where there were hundreds of people living outside in the Civic Center, about a quarter mile from our house. I recognized the presence of so many churches in the area, one of which I was a part of at the time. And I initiated a collaborative effort to help connect those churches with the services that we're providing for the unhoused in the community.
So you're a natural problem solver. You take initiative.
I do. I love to work with people that have a passion for creating solutions that truly help people and that connect us, because, none of us exists in a vacuum. No problem exists in a vacuum. I really recognize that in my studies with occupational therapy, recognizing that, everything that we do, everything around us, we all have different perceptions of life. We all have different experiences that influence how we see the world. And that is really interesting to me.
Okay, well, we're going to get back into how that translates into what you do today. Jeffrey, tell me, where'd you grow up? How'd you get involved in what you're doing today?
I actually grew up all over. My father was in the Air Force, so that means I was in a lot of little towns, big towns, all over, overseas. And so I enjoyed my childhood. I ended up, we always migrated back to where I was born, which is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Okay. And so I'd always go back to that. And each time we went back, there would be something different. When I was about 4 years old, my mom was trying to figure out what to do with me for the summer because she was working. My father was an enlisted man. Enlisted men don't make a ton of money when they have three kids. And they were just trying to make it work. He's in Vietnam. and so she needed to find something for me to do. And she found this summer program that became the beginnings of Head Start in the city.
Wow.
And so I was part of that program. I remember sandwiches. They were great. from that moment on, I graduated from high school there and went to Marquette University. And so I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I got a degree in political science and learned about systems. And right after that, I went into retail. Big box retail. I worked for Sears and Kohl's department stores. I was a store manager for Kohl's department stores. And then I'm at a party and this guy says, what do you really like to do? And I started talking about human development and how I like the fact that I got all of these people promoted. It's my time period in retail. I got about 150 people promoted. And somebody from another group heard this and decided that he was going to let me know that there was this little school in the city of Milwaukee and it needed me.
Wow. Okay.
So if you could take a pay cut and get involved in this, would you do this? And I felt like I owed my life to the fact that people helped me when I was younger. And so I said, I'm going to do this for 3 years. So I went from retail to this little school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with two sites, about 1,000 children. And I started out being their financial officer. I was going to do it for 3 years, be happy, say I paid back the world, and go back to making money. And then the world changed, and I ended up being the executive director of the organization. And we took kids from zero to eighth grade. And so it was an incredible experience. Our kids went on and were extremely successful. I did that for 11 years. There are five kids who did not end up graduating from high school. I still remember the five.
Wow.
And it was just, it got me to the point of, hey, look, you can make a major impact if you continue to be in this. And so my career has always gone back to this.
Your heart is with the kids.
Yes, it always goes back to the kids. And what I found was 0 to 5, if you can get them young enough, you can make an incredible impact on their lives and send them on a path to be extremely successful. And so I love what Head Start does. I love what Early Childhood does. The programs who do it right, the kids go on and have success in life. And so I had a child and decided he had to go into a program immediately. Not mine, but somebody else's. And it's just continued from there. And what Krista is doing with the housing project is an incredible.
Okay.
It really is.
So now what you two are doing on the ground is made possible because of the state. Mm-hmm. Andrea, your work is manifesting right here in my studio.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your background.
Yeah, well, I am the daughter of a social worker, granddaughter of an agricultural worker, and special education teacher. My family's from a small town in the Dominican Republic. And so my early and most formidable years, even as I think back to, you know, preschool or kindergarten or first grade, before I even knew what public service was as an adult, those early years were really formed by, you know, classroom teachers, lunchroom attendants that were not only helping me navigate my day as a young kid, but also, I think, instilling some really important values around asking questions, being critical of things, and also knowing that the adults around you not only have a responsibility to help you navigate your day, but also to think about the big picture of yourself and to think about the context of what you believe is possible regardless of your circumstances. And I think that's particularly was true for me as a young Black kid, somebody that grew up in a really working class family, had a family and teachers that had high expectations of me. But later on, as I came to understand what public service meant, and I remember thinking that people in public service were cut from a different cloth for me, that that was not for me. I never thought I would be in state government. And I think all of those experiences have helped me understand how important it is to grapple with difficult truths, particularly when you love your community, when you love your beloved state, like I'm sure many of us do in Oregon. It means not only singing its praises, but also being critical of things, being critical of what has worked and what hasn't and what we are going to do about it. And as we think about our values to solve these issues, to have a better future for Oregon, it means that our values can't fall flat. And unless we operationalize those values in real ways, and I couldn't think of a better way to do that with Oregon's kids, then we aren't living up to, I think, some of the boldest and most important values of our state.
Well, it sounds like you're a natural-born societal change agent. Tell me about these 9 projects that are part of this effort.
Yeah, well, across the state, we have 9 projects ranging from Portland, Multnomah County, Deschutes, Lane County, and then, of course, right here in Jackson County that are representative of this partnership to bring affordable housing and early care either co-located or nearby. Just to give you a flavor of some of these projects, some of them include senior housing with Head Start. Some of them are adding additional classrooms with culturally specific programming, which is important not only because we're adding those spaces and being able to solve some of the real problems, I think it also makes sure that the content of those messages are building up kids. And every kid needs something different. And so it's important that we are thinking about not only the space, but also thinking about how we are beginning to instill and inspire kids at a really young age. Some of the projects are addressing workforce development issues. If you think about some of the intersections between not only affordable housing and childcare, but also think about the economic benefits, both here in Jackson County, that this could bring and across the state. Whether you are a small mom and pop business or a large corporation, one of the things that you need are a workforce and employees. And as those employees' personal life evolves, and if it evolves in a way where they have children, they're going to need childcare, and they're going to need childcare that is both accessible and affordable. And so as we think about these projects and the different needs that they're meeting for infants, toddlers, preschoolers, children with disabilities, this is also thinking about the economic strength of our city, thinking about the economic security of our state and how to ensure that our trajectory as a state is helping to address some of the core issues, but also continuing to ensure that businesses can thrive so that Oregonians can be here and can be here in an affordable way. And for anybody that might be thinking about calling Oregon home, that we are thinking about some of the core important aspects of good infrastructure alongside addressing some of the core fundamental needs that we all rely upon, which is housing, affordability, and if you've got kids, childcare.
Absolutely. So talent retention and talent recruitment means that you need assets like this. My guests are Andrea Bell, Executive Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services, Jeffrey Lowry, Program Director for the Oregon Child Development Coalition, and Krista Palmer, Executive Director of Sunstone Housing Collaborative. So Krista, how would this project look in Ashland?
Well, the plan is for the 4-acre parcel, up to between 90 and 100 units of housing, a combination of rentals and affordable homeownership through a community land trust.
What do we mean by affordable?
Affordable, well, according to HUD, you know, affordable means that a household does not pay more than 30% of their monthly income on housing that includes utilities. Ashland residents currently, 50% are rent burden, which means that they do indeed pay more than 30% of their income. So that, along with the Ashland School District being a Title I school, those are indicators that there is a need for housing, as it is the foundation of a family's life, for housing to be affordable and accessible and safe and stable. So
there'll be about 100 units here.
That's the plan. We're in the very early stages of planning at this point. There's been a developer selection, architect, builder, all of that. So depending on funding sources and viability of the location, and
what are the costs for this kind of development?
The specific cost, I mean, that's something that the developer has a much better grasp on than I do. You know, I'm.
But you'll be managing it.
I will not be. No. Sunstone Housing Collaborative is solely the like I said in the beginning. You know, we're the vision stewardship on behalf of a mission-driven landowner. So you know, the school district identified this need. They have land that they would like to pursue affordable housing on. We are kind of the bridge, the conduit.
Gotcha.
We will not be the manager. No.
will this be a place for teachers?
Yes, that is part of the plan. A prioritization for income qualified teachers and staff. So that includes, you know, janitorial services. That includes cafeteria staff. That includes EAs, educational assistants, pretty much every classified employee of the Ashland School District would likely qualify according to their income for this housing.
So they can live in the region where they work?
If they choose to, yes.
And then on the premises, we're talking including childcare and early learning, right, Jeffrey?
Yes.
So tell me how that works.
Well, the idea behind anything is for kids to be successful. and to have a system that is a feeder system that would go to Ashland School District. If the kids are educated in this area and are successful, you want them to continue to move up within the system. And this would be part of that. You also have parents that are going to be working parents. They're either going to work in Ashland or they're going to work somewhere else, maybe in Jackson or Josephine County. They're going to have some way so that they can actually go out and work and take care of the expenses to this, even though the cost, we're trying to keep the cost very low for the project.
And they need a trusted source where they can put their most precious commodity,
yes,
their children.
So the quality of the program is extremely important. This is something that I've seen. My sister lives in Atlanta. I saw this, and this happened to in Atlanta to at-risk kids, which is kind of my expertise to begin with. Mm-hmm. So when I saw it done there, where they took a neighborhood that no kids graduated from high school, no kids were successful, and they started with this, and the neighborhood—
And it transformed the community.
It transformed the community so much so that everybody wants to buy a house there now.
Okay. speaking of which, Andrea, we've got about a couple of minutes left. So tell me, how is this, these projects, how are they designed to be successful, and how do you measure what success looks like?
Yeah. So the way in which I think there's a couple things that come to mind here is one of the things that really resonated with us early on in this is that our role in it as a state is going to be to make sure that there are resources available and the right partnerships need to come together, keeping in mind that most developments that we finance, they are coming to us with the partnership already formed. In this instance, it's a little bit different. And so it has been really important for the state to really rethink what partnership means and to also empower those partnerships to happen in a locally driven way. And that's thing one. I think in terms of what success will look like, it looks like at least in three dimensions, which is one, ensuring that the project and its vision actually comes to life, that it is operationalized in that community, that it is representative of the program design and the core things that people in those communities resonated that they needed, that those attributes are reflected specifically and clearly, and that those aren't abstract. And then the third thing, which I think provides a real opportunity for Oregon to be really the leader of the pack here across the nation, is to measure the experience of the family and the children. And I think that that can look in several different ways. And I think that's part of where we as a state are going to really be learning from early care and educators, which are, what are some of the main attributes that we should measure in terms of, did we get it right for families and children, both in terms of accessibility and affordability of housing, but also helping to make your everyday life better? And then I think it's for us to think about, how does this inform how we order our next steps as a state? Because as exciting it is to have these projects, we need more of them.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.